Welcome back to episode 13 of Press Row,
Texax
produced. A Texax produced podcast breaking down the key storylines in Aggie football with the people who cover it closest. You can find Press Row in video format if you're a premium subscriber at Texax. We got it on iTunes or the podcast player of your choice. Subscribe, download, rate, and review. For details, go to texax.com/podcast. I'm Gabe Bach of Texags with Billy Lucci, Olin Buchanan of Texags, Robert Cessna, the Bryan College Station Eagle, and Brent Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle. And boys, we got a lot to dive into today. Coming off 74-72 in seven overtimes to snap the seven-game slide against LSU. To
keep
do it at Kyle Field.
Go ahead. You want to do it. Let's hear it.
They were the number seven team. Kellen had seven touchdowns, and you started seven seniors in the game. So
and
we had
number
that
seven, Jashaun Corbin had a couple carries.
Yeah, right. For a loss of about seven. Yeah,
you're saying it was a lucky seven.
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been. How about this game, though, guys? Man, we got a lot to get into.
Just like I said, you know, it's incredible. We'll talk about this for decades, years, as long as we're alive. We'll always talk about that night at Kyle Field just because, and unfortunately we talked before about games that weren't as pleasant, but now at the top of the list, because I know you guys, our cell phones exploded once it went to overtime. I mean, and then it just kept exploding, and then you're sitting there, and, you know, and I know I'll talk about the resiliency later or whatever, but, you know, you say, okay, just – and I guess maybe because I covered A&M too long, we said, what if they lose? But no, they won. They won.
I got a BAS.
Yeah, BAS. And
What's that?
I was sitting there wondering myself, you're sitting there going, I mean, how many times were they down to? I was telling somebody, how about just before overtime, you punted away with 2.5 minutes left, and you go, all right, first of all, they can't get a first. And even if they do, you're going to have to go about 90 yards in a minute and a half with no timeouts. That looked about as bleak as it gets for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Then the knee touches. There's that play. The game was over then. I know a lot of people left
when that ball Gatorade left. On the field at that point.
Gatorade on the field. Yeah. And Leone
those
and
guys
I
going to really use that Gatorade later.
They're all cramping up, right?
And that was even later. That was after Rogers goes out.
That's why they were kissing it. Trying to get some Gatorade.
So they throw the pick, call back. Then you get a 4th and 18. It was a great catch by Courtney to slide like, and then you get, you know, they threw an 18-yard touchdown pass on with 1 second left.
That's and even to get that was the Rodgers play.
And then Josh to get out with 1 second.
Right. Yeah. Like when we're writing the game summaries, or at least I was, all that gets
just
overlooked.
Just to get to overtime.
Because it's Kendrick Rogers catching the 2-point conversion and the touchdown, you know, and all those things. And I'm like, what a huge game Courtney Davis had. But that's kind of left in the dust by what happened
Travion
in seven overtimes.
Was legendary.
Right. Yeah.
Kellen was six touchdowns, no picks. But Kendrick Rogers.
Yeah.
You have to talk about so that.
It was theater, right, Brent? It was. But, you know, like, you guys appreciate the
I enjoy the drama of it. Yeah.
The theatrics
the full
of that
circle
thing.
Of Kendrick Rogers having the big game against Clemson, disappearing for a long time, being hobbled by the injury, coming back with that kind of performance when you need it the most.
It was high theater.
That was incredible.
Entertainment.
It's book worthy.
I was spent at the end of the game. You can imagine the players just covering it. You're just so on edge because you don't know what's going to happen next. And I mean, I would just never come back like that.
Go ahead.
I got a text message from my wife saying, what time do you think you're going to get home?
I understand that one.
That was all night. The first overtime. Yeah,
I got one. I got a text that said, I should have put the kids to bed at the end of regulation, you know, because they stayed up all the way through and they couldn't wait to talk to me.
Johnny and I were talking before the game. We were like, what time do you think it'll be over? And we were trying to decide if we could go sneak in a nice steak dinner after the game. You know, what time do they close? And we're saying, well,
I know, does IHOP have steak?
Well, that's what we were trying. The steakhouse, they're like, they'll close by 11. I wonder how late the kitchen's open. And I'm going, it should be over around 9:30. And then I go, y'all can get there and order me something. And Johnny goes, both those teams might line up and just run it on every damn play. It might be over by 9. Then I'm like, 3 hours.
Famous last words.
Midnight.
How about that?
We had kind of mentioned this earlier, too, but while I'm on deadline trying to write, you know, zeroed in, my phone keeps blowing up from people I haven't heard from in forever who are just casual sports fans, not even big college football fans, who stayed up and watched that. And, you know, as my brother texted me, he said the whole nation saw that and is awake right now.
It was nice.
There's no doubt.
Go to church yesterday, half asleep. My wife showed me walk in. Gabe texts out, tell us when your preacher mentions the game.
I got hundreds of responses on that.
We laughed. Our preacher led with that.
Oh, yeah. Our guy went two and a half seconds in.
Yeah, led
with the message. He's talking about this game.
Wow.
He actually mentioned that Tex-Ex has an over-under out there on how many local... How long it takes a local pastor
don't think
to
talk
about that. Kind of set him up on that one.
That pastor didn't know that, but he still brought it up. That's the first thing he mentioned.
Yeah.
And all the whoops throughout all the church.
Yeah.
That was just incredible. To me, I was sitting there, same thing you thought, those seas. Every time they were up against it, as those overtime, you know, what, the third and 14 touchdown to Courtney.
Conversions.
Every time
fourth and six to Rodgers, game's over.
Every time they're down to a play, fourth and six to Rodgers. I mean, incredible how many times. But every time it got to that, I was sitting there going, just, man, this will be a real shame if they don't win this game. And I was thinking about what will it look like if they win and everyone rushes that field. And I'm it would suck for everyone involved, including us covering it. For the home team and for A&M to not have won that game. Because like you said, this conversation would be so much different. Oof. And that was that moment that place has been wanting and needing and doing everything they could, trying to buy it.
Talk about things coming full circle again. Right at a year ago, they fired Kevin Sumlin, then hired Jimbo Fisher with the idea of beating LSU.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was another full circle thing. Then and Kendrick Rogers.
Yeah, okay. And then you had Jimbo.
It was a sharp move.
Hint, wink.
You had Jimbo on one side and Ed O, I said this morning, deep down knowing that everyone, member of his fan base, wanted him. You had Damian and Austin Thomas and Bradley Del Pivido, who were fired by Ed O on this side. You had, like I mentioned, Ogeron and DB Corey Raymond wanted this job, but they picked Mo Lingwood. There was a lot going on there, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I said it a week ago when we were sitting up in the press box in Baton Rouge 2015, and every indication was Jimbo Fisher was taking the LSU job at that point. I thought, man, the Aggies are about to be in for a lot more butt kickings from LSU. And now, you know, suddenly he's the Aggies coach.
Yeah.
And he's on that sideline. And you know those LSU fans are still wishing they had Jimbo, especially when you see something like that play.
And Olin, you and I talked about this at the start of the show, but these demons vanquished, not only you beat LSU, but in doing so, 6-1 at Kyle Field, 3-1 in November, you snapped the LSU slide, and for the first time ever, something Johnny didn't even do, 2nd in the SEC West.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you turn your program around in the building process.
Yeah, you know, Jimbo Fisher, one of the first things he talked about was changing the culture. It's clearly been changed on the field. I know we're going to talk about probably later, you know, a year ago, this was a team that blew an epic loss, you know, an epic 34-point lead. And this year makes all the clutch plays in an epic victory. Man, nothing demonstrates the change of the culture on the field than that. They may need to change the culture now in the bleachers next for people that were leaving early because giving up too soon.
Whoa.
But I think the culture among the team definitely has changed. That's indisputable.
And you talk culture goes with what you saw with the fight. And I love the fact there's so many little things that we saw the seeds planted against Clemson with the way they battled and battled and battled. And you saw Clemson getting tired and A&M wasn't. They were, you know, I equated that to it like the first Rocky where the fight stops and Rocky sitting there, he could have kept fighting and Creed was on the ropes. But by the way, the new Creed, not so good.
Could you imagine a conversation between Rocky and Ed Orgeron?
I'd pay to watch it. I'd pay to watch that one. But like... If you, there wasn't much conversation between Ed O and Jimbo after that.
Ed O had a quick little time.
Ed O was a little sticky, though.
Ed O was pissed. Could you imagine having to coach through all those overtime soaking wet? That would
Jimbo, I was going to say, that might have been the first game where both coaches were doused in Gator. It could have been at the end of the race.
Hey, he had to be like, dude, these mother effers. He's probably like, if I lose this game, I have to win this game because I can't lose it because they freaking already doused me. Like, hip and his age, probably like, I can't.
Yeah, he didn't like
lose.
Ken. You know, you saw his reaction. It wasn't like big smiles.
Guy Morris.
Guy Morris. It happened to him.
Against LSU.
I was just going to say, the bluegrass miracle.
When they shook hands, Jimbo should have licked his fingers and said, you know, whatever flavor it was.
Okay, I'll be seeing you again.
And by the way, the bluegrass miracle, the OC was Jimbo Fisher.
Okay.
For LSU.
So
interesting, huh?
My thing was, though, you know, everybody made a big deal about Jimbo calling that timeout late against Bama, and his whole deal was we fight to the last second around here.
Yeah,
that's what we do.
My question, so I wasn't meaning to make a big deal out of it.
You know, I mean,
But
it was a storyline. It was because
I heard you reference that, and then I said, yeah, it was Owen who asked that, because it was one of those things you just kind of tossed it out there.
You noticed
near
it.
The end. And Jimbo gave a great answer.
It's like a Tim Tebow type of answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And it turns out that it was, right? It was like, but that was, it proved prophetic. And it's just like every little thing we wanted to see, and you want to say, what do you call a success? And it was, let's see the team get better. Let's see these guys hang in when you're going to inevitably lose some games in the SEC. And how do they respond? And can they play physically against the teams that have kicked their butts physically? So culture is that, but it's also you played a team that last year, I remember, as someone that went to A&M and watches football, it pissed me off when Darius Geis, because he was right, and he said they are unwilling to match our physicality. Yeah. We play at a physical level that he said that we play at a level of physicality that they're unwilling to match. It was so true, and that sucks to hear. When you're in a league where you have to be physical and another opponent says, yeah, they won't match our physicality, and you know it's true, it kind of gives you, like, kind of hopeless, like, geez. But he said that a year ago.
Especially when you kind of grow up on the wrecking crew and things like that.
Yeah, when
you
know,
my memories, my earliest memories were what Jackie was doing and the toughness
tough
and the
guys,
physicality.
Simonini.
And then they go into the SEC and they lose that.
Dan Campbell. Yeah.
Well, that's back.
It's why Aggies love Billy Clyde so much. Mm-hmm. He was the most beloved coach probably since, you know, Jackie and RC. That's what Aggies want to see is that fight and that physicality. And you're in the league that you won't win without it. And for him to say that, and then the other night, and I think you had it in your article, because I'm going to have to find it. Was it Travion that said that?
He said LSU.
We were ready to keep going.
They were gassed, talking about LSU. They were gassed, and we were just getting started.
Think about what a difference a year makes in those two.
Now, I don't know if I really believed him, because I saw
A&M was,
who was it? Kendrick Rogers stood up and was holding his
thigh. Right.
Kendrick Rogers made three or four huge catches after that, didn't he? Or a couple at least.
But it was a great quote. We're just getting started.
All right, well, they felt that mentally, man, their bodies might have started giving out, but mentally they were like, let's keep playing.
You got to have all that.
Practices are easier than this.
You got to have toughness and physicality, but you got to be resilient and have clutch, too. We're going to get into these angles, something you wanted to hit on.
Yeah, the resiliency of this team, because that all touches on, we talk, you know, so much mental, the resiliency able to go on. And I know all of us but one, you know, we raise kids. And you just never know.
Way
to single him out.
Good point. How do you know when I met you? But, you know, you never know when that light's going to go on. You keep preaching to your kids. And you try different methods. And you see that, oh, my gosh, like Luch talked about earlier, all those moments that A&M could have failed, and maybe A&M teams in the past, as 1 year ago, would have failed.
Yeah.
But this team found a way, and you know, you got to give Jimbo Fisher that, but you also could give these players that. We saw this team. You go out there, and it's the little things like the blaring music. You went out. We couldn't hear ourselves talk. I couldn't be able to tell my jokes or bad jokes. Now you go out. Everybody is so focused, and they're not dancing around. Someone's gonna say, "Oh, it's a wonderful day." No, show us it's a wonderful day. This team was able to go ahead, and the resiliency was amazing. And that one game, and it's like 5 years that it's been missing. Johnny Manziel had that resiliency. The players with him had that resiliency. And I thought 5 years ago this program was just going to go bananas. Well, now I think it can, because you think about all those sophomores. They you know, the learning experience, but the resiliency just was, if you're a parent, you had to be proud. If you're a fan, you had to be proud of that team way they won.
The clutch effort of these guys. I mean, Kellamond has had a really nice year and has come. He's been at his best when the chips are down. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But then look at a guy like Rodgers, who's done almost nothing, only except for when the chips are down, which is it. That's a very interesting storyline there. Is Rodgers has only come out, like I said in the press conference, when it's gotten dangerous out there. That's when he's come out.
He also mentioned he's fully healthy for the first time in a while, too. So obviously that plays.
And there are some guys like that affects more than others.
Right.
I mean, you watch and cover enough football, you know this. And that doesn't mean that a guy's soft or he can't. Some guys, like, I feel like so there are some guys that just an injury affects them differently. They worry about it more. They don't want to get significantly hurt. They don't. And you're just not feeling your best. You're mentally. So when some guys need to be all the way back to be back, and he's back.
But think about just resiliency of Kellen Mond. He's been under so much criticism this year when they lose or things go bad. He even started when he missed his first seven passes in the second half, and you heard people going like, "Oh, you know," even up in the press box, you're hearing like, "What is he doing?" Well, he's winning the biggest game of his life when it's all said and done.
Kellen is so resilient. But here's an interesting thing about him. If you really, like, get the – and I think with us covering him, if you really pay attention, you can get to know him. He's not – he doesn't pay attention to any of that. And not in a bad way, like he doesn't – football doesn't matter. He's pretty damn dialed in, and he doesn't really – like, the stuff that's said on TexAgs or that anybody writes about him, it doesn't faze him because he really doesn't pay attention to it. Like, genuinely doesn't. And I think that's important. And I think we saw it last year, the kind of, like, late-game grit and toughness he had when he really had – I always go back to that UCLA game. I say, this dude couldn't complete a pass to save his life in that game. A true freshman, out of high school, playing in an offense that was setting him up to fail – at the Rose Bowl with all the momentum trending against his team. And people forget that he ran for almost 100 yards in basically a half of work. And had he not stepped 6 inches or out of bounds on that, he goes 40-something yards to the house to ice it in the fourth quarter of a Rose Bowl. That, and I was like, huh. And then you saw it against South Carolina. You saw it in the loss to Bama. You saw it at Florida. And you're just like, if they could teach him how to play quarterback, and then you hired Jimbo Fisher, this side of it.
Yeah, one of the things I wrote about on Saturday is Kellen grew up in a military background, very strict upbringing. His father, Kevin, was military. He said he wasn't Kellen said he wasn't much of a yeller, but you knew to be disciplined and squared away. And so he has that background. He's cool by nature. And then he gets Jimbo, as you said. And so he absorbs that. He doesn't let it anger him and say, this guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. He takes it in. He keeps his composure all during that while Jimbo's up in his grill and yelling at him and all those things. And you're seeing it translate late in the games. You know, like I mentioned earlier, the Ole Miss. You know, he has that bad start in the second half, keeps his composure and comes out.
This is one of the angles I wanted to hit on.
Real quick, but I think Kellen, there was a moment in fall camp that I think I mentioned it on this show at one point, but when we're talking about who won the battle, there was a moment where Kellen had a particularly rough stretch in one of those late scrimmages. And Jimbo, it was a play. I think he, like, had the open first down. He took something bigger and didn't convert it. And Jimbo, you know, laid into him in front of the whole team. And, people that were there were like, man, he got on his butt good, you know. And then right after that, they did a two-minute drill. And Kellen, in the live scrimmage, went, seven, eight plays where he was doing it all with his arm, and they went down the field and scored a touchdown. I mean, immediately after that. And some people were like, to me privately, that's when he won the job. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like Jimbo says, he wants to push them to their limit because he knows they're going to get pushed to their limit in a 7 overtime game against LSU, and that's what happened to him.
So, Olin, did he answer his critics once and for all?
Yeah, there's always going to be somebody out there. I think Billy said it best. I heard him say a few months ago. Some guys who thought Kellen would not be the starting quarterback just want to be right. And so he's never going to be do enough, save, being the MVP of the national championship game, for some people to admit, okay, this guy deserves to be the starting quarterback. But when you go out and you throw 6 touchdown passes, I get it. A lot of them are in overtime. But against that secondary, how can you question him and rationally question this guy anymore and what he's done. I think he's number 29 in the country in passing. So is he All-American caliber? No. But he's in his first year in this Jimbo Fisher offense that we've talked to multiple people that have a background with Jimbo Fisher or his offense and will say, you really don't know what you're doing until the second year. So I look at what Kellen's done this year, and I applaud it. He's done some amazing things, and I think you're going to see him continue to get better. I think the next step is understanding when to take off running earlier. And
which he did in overtime. It was a huge play. That was one of his bigger plays.
But I think what you're going to see from him moving on is you're going to see him recognize those opportunities earlier, and you'll see him become a guy that just – makes quicker decisions. Yeah. I think that's what you're looking for. That's the next step for him.
And I 1,000% agree with Olin there. And what I think also is it coincidence that Kellen Mond's 10 touchdowns, no turnovers against Clemson and LSU? Think about those two names I just said. Right. 10 touch. Now, I do think some of it has to do with that those were the games were at home. 10 touchdowns, zero turnovers against those two defenses. That's like what Deshaun Watson did 2 years in a row against Bama. You know, that's that kind of production, not to mention 430 against Clemson. But go look at those games and even South Carolina. They're his three best games by far. What do those games have in common? His receivers were making plays and helping the quarterback out. Courtney Davis at South Carolina, Jace was spectacular. But then in those two games, Kendrick Rogers, Courtney Davis, Jamon made some huge catches. You had, you know, obviously Jace is the consistent factor and all that, but your receivers were out there making, you know, at times you just got to say, let the quarterback throw it up and let your receivers make plays. I mean, one of his incompletions, Johnny made a living off that. There's Mike, I'm going to throw it up. I'm not saying they have to be like Mike. But Kendrick was.
Yeah, Kendrick was.
He really was. He was.
In fact, I wish Mike had been like Kendrick in that Auburn game.
Right. Yeah. Well, and really, they didn't help him enough throughout the course of a lot of that game in the second half and all the drops and everything, and then they came alive a la Clemson, right? It really reminded you a lot of Clemson. Kellen's in the zone. Rodgers comes alive again. Courtney's making plays.
Yeah, and you mentioned Deshaun Watson, too, who is Kellen's role model. True. And that's who he, you know, a few years ago he said, I'm going to pattern my game after.
Yeah. Good guy to pattern.
It's a pretty good pattern. I know I voted for him for the Heisman a few years ago.
So. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Who won it that year?
Who was it? Somebody, Lamar Jackson?
Yeah.
Get that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Should have been Lamar Jackson. Brent, we've been around this thing a long time. You've covered a lot of incredible events, football and beyond. Mm-hmm. Where does Saturday night rank your estimation?
I started thinking about that, and at some point I'll do a list because you know how we all love lists.
We do.
Okay, so the Big 12 title game 20 years ago, once again, coming full circle if you're going to round off numbers, 20 years ago, I had to jump out of the way. I know Cease was right down there, too. You were down there. I had to jump out of the way of Sir Parker when he got into the end zone. And that was an amazing game. You know, all those years of covering, and that was the one title game I've covered, you know, in terms of them winning it. So I thought of that in terms of football. Baseball, I thought of the 99 Super Regional here when Steve Truitt Clemson. Against Clemson, once again, that name. Steve Scarborough.
Back to back,
yeah. Pushes them into the College World Series. Yeah. Olsen Field was electric. It was unbelievable. Men's basketball, you know, the obvious. Northern Iowa, you know, the comeback.
There's something that you just couldn't believe what you
which
were
I will say that will probably be the all-time unique thing we cover because seven overtimes, crazy as it was, that's happened 5 times in FBS history. That has only happened once, that kind of comeback. So I would say that was probably top of the list in terms of just uniqueness.
Just on the clock, it's so rare. 33 seconds to do it.
And that one, I'll say about that, though, I'm totally with you. You'll never see that. You're more likely to see that again than the other. But that, I'll be honest, sitting there, I was just kind of in shock. Like, wait, is this really going?
Right.
You didn't get to just really enjoy, like, embrace what was happening until it was almost like over. This drama extended on for an hour plus, probably almost 2 hours.
Oh, nine and a half, I figured.
Yeah.
One more, which was very special to me, you know, all these years of covering, there's been one kind of national championship among, if you said, the Big Four, women's basketball with Gary Blair.
Yeah.
But I was in a very unique situation with our only daughter was born that day. the day they won the title. So Zoe is in our arms while Crystal's in bed at the hospital at St. Joseph Hospital, and we're watching the Aggies win. So that was something I'll never forget.
Wow. Obviously. And that wasn't even one you covered.
No. I would have been. It was in Indianapolis,
right? You covered the ride.
I would have been there.
Right.
Except our daughter was being born.
I always thought you would have named her something like Marinicky.
Yeah.
Easy to remember.
We joked about Sydney Blair.
There were a couple of Sydneys.
Yeah. I remember being on the court then. You mentioned the green confetti coming out.
Yeah, because they had
the wrong
blue
color. And I'm back to back. I talked to Bowen Lofton and
Larry Bowen.
Bill Byrne.
And James.
You should think about different things. But you're right. That, you know, funny you should mention it. I going back to the championship game in 1998 when they beat Kansas State. I always remember that. I guess you were there. It was Chip Howard. We're down at the end because we wanted to be away. Remember the snaps at the 32, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. We're way down there. And Chip Howard's beside me, and I had that big old tape recorder. And when Chip and I were talking about bowl, you talk about bowl possibilities, and they scored because I was in one of the papers. I had my hands up. I turned to Chip. I go, "We're going to New Orleans." I got my hands up. It's always about me. It's always about
like
me.
Let me tell that story just real quick because there was an addendum I don't think I've ever told. Okay, so Cease was captured in the paper going like this.
Oh, they're like this,
Okay, so then somebody at the Eagle takes that picture, and we had something at that time, I don't know if it's still there, called the Christmas Cheer Fund. Mm-hmm. And so on the billboard it said Christmas Cheer Fund, and they blew up the picture of Cease going like this.
If that happened now, they'd be like, you know, look at Cease. You know, even the College Station Eagle, they're acting like Lucci down there now.
Yeah, so '98, that was right when Tex-Ex was cranking up.
Yeah,
so,
right. But here's a confession.
That was back when Fat Wally was giving me a hard time.
But I know Gabe's going to talk about it. And just think about us, you know, Florida now. He's going to talk about that. But, you know, you do look about, man, when your team that you cover wins, you win.
Yeah, hey, here's my take, and Brent can speak to this more than I can because he's in it. Like, you cover the Rockets playoff run, but these guys, like all my buddies in Houston that do great work down there, like Greg Bailey and Nuno and all the guys that I know and then all the guys y'all work with, Dallas when the Rangers were doing it, like, those guys on the ticket, they all love it. And they are all fans of the pro sports teams in those cities. And if they act like they're not, they're wrong, and they are, and they get on board the beat guys that cover these teams, and it's a fun ride for everyone. And you got to be able to be critical when it warrants it. You got to be able to say, hey, if they'd have lost this game, why did they lose it? Well, there was this play and this call, and you know, the play calling on the inside the fight, it would have been, you know, you would have had second guessed it if you lose. But everybody that's along for this kind of game, we all loved it. And if you didn't, then you're too much
of a curmudgeon.
You're too much of a curmudgeon, and it's like, quit taking yourself so seriously. You love this game. You were happy A&M won because you got to see all this. And like I said, if you warrant and you're rooting against the team you're covering, then that's an even bigger problem.
It was amazing for so many reasons. All the things before the game, like we mentioned before. 7 straight losses to these guys. You've been struggling in November. All the things. You're trying to get a better bowl game, and then you get through a game like that and to win it. And I know it must have felt like emotionally like trying to boat a marlin. You've seen those guys that are trying to – and you fight it.
I've done
fight
that
it. Okay, you've done that. So you fight it for
never like 10 minutes.
They have to fight it for an hour.
I was jacked as Billy.
Was that after you went to the Catalina wine mixer?
I've been throwing up.
You finally get it in the boat because you're – you know, an expert fisher, and so you get that one that just finally didn't get away. And I think that's what you're, as much as anything, remember, it's not just beating LSU, it's the way you won. And so that game, in my mind, you know, when you start thinking of the great A&M football victories or just games, but you know, it's always the victories you remember the most, of course the 98 championship game, but you know, in the pantheon of history, you know, you're going to talk, you always have to talk about the 1922 Dixie Classic here, and you always got to talk about the 1939 National Championship. Then you bring it up to that game, and then that 85 win over Texas, and that win over Oklahoma, when if Kyle Field had a dome, I wouldn't be able to hear today. And then, of course, the win at Alabama. And then I think, you know, maybe somebody has another one. But I think, you know, that's that game that we just saw is the next one in that line of these historic, not just great, but historic victories.
It's in my top three. I go Bama out there, which was just surreal. It was just like, this is fun. This is cool. This is unforgettable. And you knew you were watching greatness in history with what Johnny was doing and then everybody else. But you knew with number two, wow, this is something. We've been doing this forever. We haven't seen this. And then it was the 98 Big 12 championship, which, by the way, I wasn't there. I was watching it in Curtin at a friend's house.
Curtin?
Wow. You're not going to go to St. Louis. Just drive on over to Curtin.
Yeah. So that's a little...
If you could have given me 1,000 towns to guess it would have been mentioned on this podcast, Curtin would not have made that.
Where was Billy Lucci?
It was in L.A. It was in Vegas.
Edge,
it was
got to believe it.
Iowa, sure.
Yeah, Curtin. The Edge. So, but those two and then
good point.
And then this one. Those are my three. And if you say ones I was at, then I'll replace the Big 12 championship one with that basketball game. Those were,
and I was going, you're blessed when you're
my three are this one at Bama and then Nebraska 9-6 here. Then that's, I think, those are the only two Kyle Field stormings ever. 9-6 Nebraska here in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 9-6. Yeah, yeah. When you're saying 96, I'm going 1996.
9-6. Like 6-6 that year. That 9-6 game. Crazy defense. Von Miller. That was just an incredible football game.
It was fun. I wouldn't that game didn't Lewis. Compare in my opinion.
I'll tell you one that sticks out. We mentioned 98 Nebraska, and there was something special. There was a beautiful day here.
That was special.
But there was something. There was also something special because they honored the 1939 national champions on the field. And I remember somebody said, well, why not wait till the next year, you know, 39 to 99 or whatever. And I remember John Kimbrough told me, there's a humble brag right there. Yeah. He said, a lot of us aren't going to make it till next year. We need to do this now. So that was kind of a neat aspect.
Of course, when we're talking about the memorable games, you know, somebody's going to say, well, why didn't you talk about the bonfire game, which was a great win, but I think it's kind of a different.
That one's always number one in a category by itself.
It's different. Yeah.
It's number one in its own category. It will never be replaced.
You're right. Good point.
As far as how thrilling the game was and just how intense and just – literally, like, it just, like, as I say, it was so intense for so long.
High drama.
The drama, I'd say this in the Big 12 title game.
Well, that brings up two.
That basketball game was a crappy game.
Yeah.
For 59 minutes.
Yeah.
This, the momentum swings. I mean, A&M was 15, 20 yards away from ending it with a field goal going up 27-17 with about 10. And we know it's not over, but, I mean, for all intents and purposes, you're like, they're going to win this game. And then the fumble run back, the LSU took. That was a really good game if it would have ended in regular. If A&M would have gone for two at the end of regulation and one team wins or loses, that would have been a hell. We would still be saying that was an incredible.
I thought about that when they had the penalty, you know, if they'd go ahead and go for two-point conversion.
I would never.
That was a heated debate.
I mean, I wouldn't either, but I'm saying.
In the media interview room, you know, we're watching and a certain reporter was, they need to go for two. See, I told you. I said, you don't do that on your home field. This is your
and,
your
and not
field.
Against a team that LSU was not known for their offense.
Right.
So you had when you on your home field and you have momentum,
the advantage. Yeah.
You go and play it. I would have gone for one against Clemson, even though they were way better. A&M had all the momentum in that Clemson game. But to me, like, When I was watching the ending of that thing, you're going, in overtime, both those offenses should have really struggled. Yeah. LSU's defense, when you box an offense in and they don't have to cover as much ground, you can't go over the top, so those DBs are all right there. And then A&M with their defensive front and how they stopped the run against a running team, you would have thought that those overtimes would be field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal.
That's where having that 6'5 receiver comes in handy in that situation too.
Well, and this is a program that since the move to the SEC has been nomadic in terms of who's the rival. Mm-hmm. And that's something you wanted to hit on.
Well, yeah, I think it's Jacob Hester, their old running back. I was on the radio with him the other day, and he said, does A&M consider LSU a rival? And I said, you know, it's funny you ask that because all day yesterday, the whole theme was, is this a rivalry game? And if you were talking about Texas, and rightfully so, like, is this a rival? And the A&M players basically said, no. you know, they're like, no, it's we haven't beat them, you know, and now I'll say it's a rivalry game. And A&M has, and Brent, I know you've called it, I like it, the Sabine River rivalry, and it's, I like that. It's just like, because it is, they should
the
be.
The Sabine Canteen.
Yeah.
The loser has to drink water from the Sabine River.
Yeah. Or Brent, you keep it this year.
Pour it on Ed's head.
We'll celebrate on the banks.
Yeah. The winner celebrates with 1 second left.
The winner pulls
the loser. Ed Ross, that game, is he going to do a Hugh Jackson and go bathe in the Sabine like he did in Lake Erie?
I bring that up every year.
Curl out of his hair.
Some point it's going to catch on.
Speed canteen. So,
but it needed to be a rivalry. And guess what? When you have the drama of that game, when you hired Jimbo Fisher, when A&M broke the streak and did it in 7, you know, you've just played one of the more memorable games in the sport's history, and then all the stuff after the game, to me, that's as long as Steve Craigthorpe is healthy. You know, which it sounds like everything's fine there. And once that's out of the way, I got no problem with things getting crazy after the post-game melee and nobody's heard anything. You don't want to keep seeing it because you got – but let's have a damn rivalry and let's have these teams to beat each other.
If you're writing a book about, you know, things, college football, A&M or whatever – those are the kind of things that make that book.
Yeah.
And then here's what happened after. Mm-hmm. I remember writing about the 1950 A&M Texas game where there's a big old fight afterward.
Yeah.
As it was written in the as Cease wrote it that day, yeah. Said an old-fashioned Donnybrook.
Donnybrook.
Yes.
I
and
like
so, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, too. Those things kind of add spice to the
rivalry. Will the LSU players please get off the field? Like that kind of stuff, and the fans booing the snapper and the punter.
See, I totally missed that.
I just happened to step out onto the balcony, which is a heck of a view, by the way. It's kind of scary.
It's there.
You look through those grates, and it's a drop all the way down
on that one
ledge, that perch. Yeah, it gives you the willies. But I go out there to video the Aggie band a little bit just to post it to Twitter. And they're doing their block T and they're marching down the field. And you hear on the PA, the couple of special teams guys from LSU had gotten on the field. You know, they shouldn't have been there, but they.
It was a snapper and a punter.
Frankly, I've seen Aggies do that too. You know, special teams guys, with the band on the field. And the PA goes, will the LSU players get off the field? And the crowd roars, and you know, and they start kind of sauntering off.
And that was during the band, so it was the band PA guy.
Wow. And the fans were already booing and stuff, so it just got them even more.
So awesome. Things like that all add up. Yeah. And then you go to the off the field stuff leading up to making this a rivalry. Kevin Sumlin pulling John Chavis away. Yeah. Jimbo Fisher going after Dave Aranda. I mean, all those things.
LSU suing A&M over Chavis.
And finally, it's a rivalry because the Aggies won.
And it was one game is going to feel like 7 losses to them.
Right?
So that's why you just escalate the
are you counting the days till we go to Death Valley?
No doubt.
Yet in the reaction from their side. That, you know, it just, you know, when Ed Orgeron's, you know, complaining about the 1 second and all that. Mm-hmm. You do that with Alabama and Auburn, and they make T-shirts out of
That's
it,
right.
ridiculing the other guy.
Yeah.
And when you have a nasty rivalry, as it continues, then, you know, when someone does bitch and moan, then you take that opportunity to ridicule them for it, and I would encourage that.
What I like, too, is Gabe, was this the highest-ranked LSU team that A&M's played since joining the SEC?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think LSU
put the babe on the spot.
I think
there.
In 2012 they were higher because higher they came
than
in.
Were they in 12?
I think they might have been even third because remember when LSU beat them, A&M wasn't even favored.
I don't think so.
2012.
It was an 11 a.m. game. I have a hard time thinking
maybe
that
it wasn't.
I think they might have been like 9 or something.
They might have been 6. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, they were 6.
Yeah.
You got it the third time.
Second highest.
3 for a quarter?
That's right.
So the second highest ranked.
And it was 18.
Second highest ranked LSU team that A&M's played in the 7. What I like about it, if you're going to beat them when they're good. See, to me, I've always contended the reason, big reason someone was let go, you couldn't beat LSU, but man, you should have. They haven't been that.
Yeah, right.
They've been about the level A&M's been at since joining the league.
Yeah.
They both won double digit games that first year.
Then
they've been above average. They've been the only difference. If A&M had beaten LSU all those years, and A&M would have been – that's the only thing that separated the two programs during that stretch.
What was the closest call? Was it 14 here when the LSU guy was
off? I thought he had a free play.
Kyle Allen.
So, yeah. They forgot yeah. about that. The LSU fans complained about
After
Fishers.
That, though, it went downhill that. In terms of the difference. Yeah. I mean, Darius Geis and that crew
came in 16 them.
And just kicking John
Chavis'
butt.
16 and 17 were terrible. 15 yeah. was just kind of a snooze.
Blah, 19-7, something like that.
Yeah. yeah. So, but to beat them when they're up, and these guys were playing, as Gabe pointed out, they've been fifth in the playoff rankings right now.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They could have snuck in.
Yeah, no, they absolutely
It mattered to them. This game was huge for them.
It was, and they wanted it. And I respect them for playing as hard as they did, too, but they wanted it bad, and you took it.
They were going to be back, quote, to elite if they won this, because that was the hammer.
That was going to be 10 wins.
Even if they didn't get into the college football playoff, they were going to go a great New Year's Six. They were back. A&M denied them that, so that'll help the rivalry.
Hey, this was a hell of a win for that. That is a potential program changer. More than anything, it validated everything that Jimbo Fisher told his team throughout the year. Mm-hmm. To those guys in that locker room, it validated this is what will happen
quickly
if you do
and
what we're asking
it's crazy to think
do.
That a year ago on this day, Jimbo Fisher wasn't even on campus yet.
Wow.
Right. That's crazy. What December 1st, right?
Yeah.
Well, hired December 1st.
Yeah, it's right around in there.
Yeah.
So meaning he's done all of that. He's changed that culture in less than
And so everybody time. Knows Cease got A&M 19th in the poll. All right? He got him up to 19th. So everyone wants to know what Cease.
Thank you.
Everyone's – it's like the grades on Sunday, right? What's his grades and where's he got the Aggies ranked?
I got to laugh because you did talk about that last week. I'm getting more emails than ever before. Like I said, I'm still getting the Missouri folks. I don't have them ranked, so they're upset. But, you know, people got to remember, like, we're talking – it's – You know, the reason all of us pick is it's your opinion. It's not a computer or anything. It's what do you think? And you guys know more than anything. I'm wrong as much as I'm right. So I just do the best I can and let them go.
Yeah. My thing with the polls is I think it's just a flawed mindset philosophy of the whole thing. And we've all grown up on them. It's just it's hard to sit there and factor in when like you're in a lesser league, let's say, just to make it not even the Big 12, if it's the Pac. You know, there are these leagues where you go, like Iowa State had no business ever being ranked, but they rose up in Texas. That was like almost a top 15 win for the long run. But when you play in these leagues and you go, win, okay, wow, they beat USC. Wow, they beat TCU. Wow, they just beat Iowa State. And you go through and you go, which of those wins were anything? It's like A&M beating UAB a couple weeks. We were joking this morning. I said that was one of the bigger false blow-ups we've ever seen is hyping up them looking at the last 2 weeks. But when A&M wins it, it's like people are watching because it's a ranked team and they think it might be an upset. There's not enough, in my opinion, of the go back and go, okay, what have these teams really done? Like and that's what I kept saying about LSU, why I thought A&M could beat them. I said, Georgia was an outlier for LSU. They were at home. Clemson was an outlier for A&M. A&M's not one play different than Clemson. But if you throw those two out and you look at what those two teams were, they were
pretty equal.
Very comparable. And that's why I thought that game was going to be a great game. And see, to me, with Texas and they're getting so much run for I still think for beating USC, who's 5-7 now, and I think for beating OU, which is a team that, in my opinion, is not. I said it all year, and I still think it. They're the most overrated team in college football this year, and they have been from day one. And it's I want them to make the playoffs so we can find out. I want them to be.
I just want to throw this in completely. Off topic, I get. Well, you kind of brought it up a little bit, but next week when Clemson wins the Pac-12 the ACC championship, they will have as many wins, 13, as all of Texas's non-conference opponents combined. We hear that a lot. You don't play anybody, and you know we play these three non-conference games, and we play this. Yeah, there are three: Maryland, USC, and Tulsa.
OU too.
OU 13 wins.
Their big non-conference test was UCLA, Army. And then Army, who they needed overtime to beat.
I always
grab
a Coke. Because
share with a friend.
You know, you talk about opinions.
Smile. Hey, thanks, Mean Joe.
I thought Michigan all year long. I thought Michigan was overrated. I kept reading people, whatever. And actually, last week I got on board. I go, okay, maybe I've been too hard. Maybe Michigan is pretty good. You know, finally. And then I picked Michigan to beat Ohio State, and it got killed. So yeah. I go, stick with your gut.
So A&M bowl projections on the way out. Athlon Sports, Outback. CBS Sports, Outback. SB Nation, Outback. We're seeing some Gators from Bleacher Report, NBC Sports. And I think ESPN right now, and they've got like third-tier guys that I've never heard of that do their bowl projections, gone are the days.
With all due respect.
Even Schlabach, these guys aren't doing them anymore, and these guys, I've never heard of them. They got Liberty and Texas, and I just kind of think they're, they're just out to lunch a little bit on what's happening is the SEC could get four teams in the New Year's Six. Well, three minimum, and that's going to move everybody's pecking order.
I wore my Liberty Bowl as an honor that we're not going back.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. What are you trying to do?
I just want to ask Luch, where are we going? Where are they going, Luch? Where are we going to be vacation?
I should have brought my Texas Bowl cutting board then.
Who's Luch betting?
No disrespect to the Texas Bowl or whatever, but
your Belt Bowl gift card?
How about this, though? If they don't blow it, I know there's a thousand what-ifs from just this game alone. But if they don't blow the lead at Auburn, they're probably going to a sugar. It would be it would be a pretty big. It would be hard. They would have a better SEC record.
Yeah. And
they would have a better SEC record than Florida and LSU, and they'd have beaten LSU.
You can imagine how welcome they would be feeling in New Orleans.
Well, but wait. Here's the other side of this. That would be the matchup that I think is going to eventually break the Cold War. Is going to be Texas or an A&M in like a Sugar or a Cotton Bowl. It could have happened next month if they would. Think about Texas if they'd have lost to OU, or definitely if they'd have beat them, they'd been in a Sugar. If they'd have lost to them, they still might get one of those New Year's Sixes anyway. There's your match. It was that close. Wow. But here's what I think. I think. What I've heard leading into this game is that you call it the Gator. That's the Tax Slayer. So. Mm-hmm.
No, they've gone back to the right way.
The Gator Bowl. Okay. The Gator Bowl has really had an eye on A&M, and I think even had they lost that game, there was a good chance that the Gator would get them. So with a win, I think at and I don't say at worst because that's kind of they're all kind of on the same level, but I think the Gator would love to have them, but. My prediction is they played their way into an Outback Bowl in Tampa on New Year's Day.
Last time the Aggies
is it New Year's Day?
At noon Eastern.
Yeah. Last time the Aggies went to the Gator, they had a Heisman Trophy winner.
Really?
They sure did.
Yeah.
The only time they played in
1957.
Okay.
Yeah. Only time they played in the Florida Bowl.
Yep.
Well, they're not going to have one this year, but Travion Williams, that dude has been, and what a pleasure to cover.
Let me ask you this real quick while you throw that. Why did they announce those semifinalists? Why couldn't you get the regular season over?
I didn't get that either for both those guys.
Because Sternberger and Travion would probably make the – or at least they should. I mean, obviously anybody knows Jay should have. But
you know, I'm surprised college football writers don't – why did they do that?
I don't know. It's
too early. Didn't make sense.
Yeah, Albert Equibonum has missed half or
some
quarter
guys
of the season.
Some guys still have two games to play.
Yeah. Jace has doubled him up in yards and touchdowns. I don't get it.
Some guys
– it's not like they have to let him know to be in Atlanta on December 6th or whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be this soon.
Yeah, some guys – literally have two games, and by the way, between rivalry weekend and conference championship, it's pretty important football games.
Yeah.
They're on a budget; they want to get on flights, save money
in a huge game against a rival, and yet he's not a.
He's got the fourth highest rushing total, I think, in the country.
Yes,
and when you stack it up, you know, you look at the teams he's played and where they rank in rushing defense.
Yeah,
it may be the most impressive performance by a running back. In the nation, and that's including Jonathan Taylor because of the wet punching bag wet paper bag defenses they have in the Big Ten.
Yeah. Gabe, tell me, stat guy, how many yards does Travion Williams need in a bowl to set the A&M single season rushing
169.
Wow.
Depending on opponents.
Nice.
Now, if you draw Michigan State and they're number one ranked run defense, but who knows at the rate he's going. But
Penn State ran wild on Michigan State. I think they could, too.
He could set that record in a bowl, single season A&M rush. Now, my other question to you, do you know where he would rank in SEC rushing history, single season history, with about 100? If he went from 169 and set the record, he would be, I think, at number 9 in the history of the SEC, the 9th best single season total. Passing Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram in the top 10. And
wow.
The guy, and along the way, he will pass that. Emmitt Smith. He will pass one of Herschel Walker's seasons. And he would be top 10 ever in this league.
And yet he's not a Doak Walker semifinalist.
With names like Bo Jackson, Derrick Henry, who's won the Heisman, Leonard Fournette. You know, there's a couple of randoms in there, like Trey Mason and who's the Arkansas
McFadden. McFadden.
Yeah, Darren McFadden. I mean, some SEC legends, and he is has a chance to be in there.
Oh, and you called 1,500. You may be short.
Yeah,
yeah, I said 1,500 yards at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it's 1,524.
And who knew that I'd be, you know, undervaluing the kid? And I think he has a great chance to set the record. I hope the A&M record, I mean. I hope he does. And if you get that, let me just say this. If he already, no matter what he does, if nothing else, we got to acknowledge that maybe that offensive line is better than it's been given credit for.
They've got – and they, here's the thing, and the team too, and the O-line and the whole team, but they've gotten better.
Like Jimbo Fisher's teams typically have done throughout.
As we said before the season, the two big concerns, O-line and secondary. O-line has removed itself from that consideration.
Secondary's moved up a little bit more of a problem. Yeah.
It's down to one.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. They got to go recruit.
Help is coming.
They got to recruit there. And speaking of recruiting, probably never a bad thing when about – 150 recruits storm the field. I don't know if they'll have to self-report some kind of little violation.
Is that worth
of that?
50,000?
Yeah, that's about 50. That's worth 50.
But to storm the field, yeah, that's the way you can go about getting players. You know, it's like a $50,000 check to the Southeastern Conference for the guys that are never going to forget this night,
I think Tony Busby has that in his front pocket.
Gabe walks around. But yeah, like, to me, that was it. Like, the recruiting, I told Gabe this morning, you know, screw battered Aggie syndrome. Now, this is these kids, the ones that matter, the ones you're recruiting, all they know is that they came and watched A&M almost beat Clemson, and that was crazy. They came back and watched A&M beat Kentucky in overtime, and they went to that winning locker room, and that was a blast. And they came back and saw that. And they stormed the field, and they went in that locker room, and they all got their pictures with Johnny and celebrated. And it was that – when you look at the players that attended that game and the recruiting list, and I said this, if A&M wins a national title, this team played a big role in that with the foundation they laid. But more than that, the players that were there, I'd love to go back and visit – okay, which guys were at that LSU game when A&M won it, if they were to win an SEC or national title, which guys on this roster were recruits at that game? Because you got about 3 years worth of them. So even if they win one in like 5 years from now, the core of that team was probably there in the stands that night.
Well, guys, this has been a fun year. Really appreciate you guys for doing this. I mean, we just had a little idea. We reached out to you guys. It's been really fun connecting TexAgs with local beat media that cover this stuff. So I just want to thank you guys for doing
it.
It's been awesome. A good time, and y'all know how it is. We could just sit here and keep talking.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I mean, I know we got to cut it off at some point, but yeah, it's fun.
Well, see, Brent and I, there'd probably be some other side conversations that we wouldn't do on this show, but Brent and I have been talking about, and see, the difference in Brent, I don't have three kids. We've been wanting to get together and have lunch and hang out. This is exactly what we would sit and talk about.
Right.
And that's why it's been fun just to hang out with you guys, and it's been a blast.
So you're saying next year y'all will
cater the lunch?
That was my idea the first time.
People would love that, watching us eat while we talk.
No, that was my idea the first time around. But I don't know who dropped the ball. We'll have to get down to the bottom of that. For once, it's not you.
Yeah, I'm going to blame Dalton.
You did a great work, Gabe. Thank you.
Now, at some point along the way, we'll do a bowl edition or something like that. We'll keep it rolling, try to get it going a little bit during hoops and just kind of let it roll. And then, obviously, signing day, recruiting.
If it's a Florida bowl, then Cease can bust back out to Hawaii.
Yeah, what the hell?
True. Yeah.
Too cold today?
No, I do. Once the first cold spell hits, the Hawaiian shirts go out.
But you'll bust it back out for the bowl if it's Florida.
If the weather's nice.
Does nobody make ugly Christmas sweaters, but like Hawaiian-themed sweatshirts?
I think just about anything I can wear can fall under ugly.
Hey, how about quite the fashionista here? Oh, well, you know, when it becomes cold, I don't wear the Hawaiian shirts.
He only wears the felt cowboy hat when it gets cold. Give us the ceremonial hug to close us out, boys.
That's what my agent said. He should be bagging groceries right now at HEB.
That's right. All right, that's episode 13, Press Row, TexAgs.com.